Hey, this is James Smith from The Popular Show, jumping on to wish you a very Merry Christmas and to thank everybody who listened to us in 2022. Why not make 2023 the year that you start supporting independent radical media? For just £3 a month, you can become a subscriber at patreon.com/thepopularpod. If you sign up now, then you're going to get access to our brilliant six-part mini-series called COVID Critical, featuring Janine Newness, Jennifer Say, Robert Freudenthal, Sunetra Gupta, Jay Bhattacharya, and Gord McGill.
It's all part of the plan.
Hey, so this is The Popular Show, and this is David Slavik, and I'm here with Sophie Hayes, who is a beautiful and wonderful comedian who is coming from us, from the Ottawa, Canada area. She is one of the most brilliant comedians I've ever met. I've had the opportunity to see her live. She's got some of the best stage presence that I've ever seen. No one throws a hip like Sophie Hayes, and I love that about her. So tonight we're going to throw some hips about a couple different issues. We're going to talk about the World Cup. We're going to talk about Love is Blind. We're going to talk a little bit about the stochastic terrorism of libs of TikTok and just some things that we're going through. James A. Smith is on a quick hiatus. He's dealing with some family health issues. As you know, a lot of us are dealing with some respiratory and health issues that are sort of new to us because of the, you know, the fact that we haven't been interacting with like other human beings for 2 years. You know, lockdowns were great and everything, but we are all sort of human petri dishes at this point. So, Sophie, how are you doing today?
I'm feeling great. Yeah. We're moving in a couple weeks. Got to go see my new apartment, so I'm feeling good.
Yeah.
Get a walk through.
That's one of the things that I've like really become comfortable with not doing is finding new apartments and things like that. Since we found ourselves stuck on the rock in Newfoundland, I have found that my resiliency in change is really diminished over time. And I think one of the things that like sort of millennials and Zoomers have like really dealt with is, you know, the transition. You're constantly moving. You're constantly finding a better place. You're moving for work. You're moving for people you love. You're moving for family. And it's something that like earlier generations didn't have to do. I was looking at some statistics about the United States. And I'm going to quiz you about this right now. And
all right.
You know, you're Canadian as I am now, but I'm, you know, as many of our listeners know that I'm originally an American. Which of these three places do you think people stay the most? California, Nebraska, or New Jersey?
When you mean say stay, you mean like they, so if they live there and they don't
do
move?
They live there for most of the life.
Okay. I'm going to go with New Jersey.
It is New Jersey.
Yeah.
What was your, why did you feel that way about New Jersey?
I have family that lives in New Jersey and I know what, not them, but I know what people from New Jersey are like. It's very like, I'm from Jersey. This is my personality. Yeah. It's the Jersey Shore effect.
Yeah. It's funny that people say like, it's the funny thing about New Jersey is like, it's got a like really complicated and interesting past. Like New York and New York City, it was a Dutch colony at one point. That became, you know, part of the, you know, the original 13 states, et cetera, et cetera. And the people who stay there, who live there, do stay there. It's a really high number. It's quite interesting. And as someone from Pennsylvania, which is right next to New Jersey, we move constantly. And
it's, nobody wants to be there.
Yeah. But people retire there. It's the number one state for retirement, which is really very interesting. Yeah. And it's primarily people from New Jersey who retire there, which is funny. But it makes you think about sort of like where we are as, you know, like a sort of a Western culture. It's like we tend to go back to where we are and where we love. And I think we're going to discuss a little bit of sort of returning to certain tropes today when we talk about some of the issues we're going to talk about today. I'm going to start with the World Cup.
All right.
You know, several years ago, there was some controversy about whether the World Cup would be in Qatar. There was a number of other places that were in contention. Countries tend to sort of in municipalities tend to like turn themselves over for, you know, these big events, whether it's the you know, Olympics or it's the World Cup or any of these big sort of places, the Super Bowl, et cetera, et cetera. And they tend to sort of like turn themselves inside out in order to make it work for them. There's a long history, and I think there's some really great writers who talk about the damaging impacts of the Olympics on host countries. This year, we've seen the Qatar World Cup, which is different in that I actually think the Qatar World Cup is actually damaging the franchise in a way that I haven't seen before. And the first thing that I want to talk about is the fact that they had promised that people who came to the World Cup would be able to drink. And as many people may know, that Qatar is basically a dry country with some exception. And at the last minute, they decided that people weren't able to drink. One thing I know about soccer fans, and I'm going to say soccer because I'm American, and that's what we do.
That's right.
That's right. And we can say that because the American dollar is more than a euro in many instances now, or frequently is. And I don't think the Canadian dollar is, but, you know, we have dollarettes.
Whatever. We have dollarettes. Dollarettes. I mean,
we literally have some sort of weird animal on our dollars. The loony, as you know.
A couple of them.
Yeah. So, you know, and so what is a loony?
It's a $1 coin that has a loon on it.
It's a loon. What is a loon?
Yeah. A loon is a big lake bird, native to Canada. Yeah. And fun fact, there's only one male loon for every lake region. So when another baby male loon is born and it grows up, they fight. And whichever one doesn't die gets to keep all of the women.
It's sort of like dating in Toronto, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, it's not like Montreal, that's for sure.
You know, it's quite funny. And loons are like a really interesting bird in that they're sort of like ugly ducks, but they actually fly more beautifully and dive. And they're very interesting in that way.
And they're really big. They're like swan sized.
Yeah, they are big. Yeah, they're like big black ducks. Blech. And the interesting thing about like sort of Canada in that instance is like Canada is leaning into its sort of global posture. I don't know if you saw this, but Justin Trudeau this past week was leaning into the leader of China in ways that I thought were quite extraordinary for the size of our country. Did you have the opportunity to see that?
He's been doing a lot of shit this week. There was like, he was in China doing that stuff. And then he was posting about fake news in Middle Eastern countries. He was just checking all the boxes.
And that comes on the heels of the Liberal government pushing for sort of restrictions on shows like this and other sort of internet media to promote what was like the correct news, as they say. That's really interesting considering that, you know, Canada is the birthplace of Jordan Peterson,
what's her name?
This Lauren Southern?
Lauren Southern, yeah. Yeah.
Lauren Southern, Faith Goldie, Rebel News, Gavin McInnes. Basically, the worst aspects of the Anglosphere come from Canada. And here we are. We're going to say we're going to fix that. also in Canada, as many people may not know, is that there was a there are hearings in Parliament right now discussing the instances of the implication of the Emergencies Act. That's basically putting the whole country in some sort of state of emergency due to different sort of factors. The prior time that it had been implicated was under Pierre Trudeau, the father or alleged father of our current prime minister, when there was an actual like terrorist, and I'm afraid to say that because I might get kidnapped myself.
I was going to say loose term, but yeah.
About the Quebec separatists. And can you explain a little bit about that situation for our listeners who are not Canadian?
Oh God, really briefly. So yeah. Like, I guess the province of Quebec is like kind of has its own deal going on, mostly just like language wise and also just like being pretty isolated. They also use their own, a different like law system, which yeah. is interesting. But anyways, there's like a separatist movement, which is that they want to like secede from the country of Canada. Yeah.
Do you think they'll ever
secede? It's not very really? Clear. No, because they don't really have like they're it's, I don't think it's possible. Like, what are they going to do? Not use the Canadian dollar?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they could join the EU and like have lower buying power. And it's always
like, yeah, yeah. Like it doesn't make sense. And I think, I don't know. It's hard because, I think that the rest of Canada really fuels the like alienation of people in Quebec, and it makes
yeah,
the problem
so
worse.
Interesting. And for our listeners from away, there are two sort of places. There's three places in Canada that are sort of separate in their own way.
Yeah.
Newfoundland, where I live, you have
geographically.
When they created the Charter of Rights some years ago that sort of integrated a constitution into Canada as they allegedly separated from the English crown, there was the discussion was that there was two distinct sort of cultures separate, which I actually think there's many more. And I think Sophie would probably agree with this because yeah. the West is a rising culture that's very different.
Definitely.
Newfoundland, because it was one of the original colonies. It's the first English colony abroad. And there's an accent here and a dialect here that's really indistinguishable from sort of like a weird Irish accent. Quebec, which, you know, is French-speaking and was, controlled by the French for some time and fought a war against our lovely Newfoundlanders not too long ago. And it's, you know, it's quite funny because they're probably the most similar provinces in some strange way. And then you have the West, which is sort of the Texas of Canada. Ontario is in the middle, and that's where you are right now. How would you describe the politics of Ontario today?
Like centrist. I don't know. I feel like people that live in Ontario don't have any like specific political goals just because Ontario is like a province that there's a lot of money here, right? Like it's not like British Columbia where like everybody's rich, but like there's a lot of like industry here and stuff. And like, I think that the wealth disparity is like pretty prevalent. Like you can see it like in every city, right? Like, so I feel like people are just after their own interests in Ontario more so. Yeah. It's such a big province too. Like there's people like in Northern Ontario that are living above the Arctic Circle. And it's just like, it's such a big province that there's no cohesion.
Yeah. There's no real like comparative place in the world to Canada. And I think that's
it's hard to explain it.
Yeah. Because you'll have like, you know, like Toronto is essentially New York City, right? You know?
Yeah.
And I think it's a better New York City. That's my opinion. And a lot of people disagree. But that's fight words. I know we're going to get some comments about that. But then as you go north, you're going to get your sort of Lake Country. And as you go east, you have Ottawa, which is sort of quasi-French speaking. That's where you are. And that's sort of the seat of government in Canada. And as you go north, you get to the point where there's Innu and all sorts of different peoples living near the Arctic Circle, you know.
Yeah, in fly-in communities. Like, you can't drive there, right?
Yeah. And that's wild. What makes the politics of Canada so interesting. But one of the interesting things that I found is that the way Canada interacts with the world, and we discussed just briefly about how Justin Trudeau has talked about the election interference from the Chinese government in Canada. One thing that for our listeners they need to know is that essentially Trudeau has come out very strongly against the Chinese interference in the government, but he hasn't actually said anything about who the people were, who is influenced, and why. And it's sort of like Russiagate without pointing fingers. And that's been quite interesting. And that's sort of the tenor of the politics in Canada right now. But to get to more like international sphere, let's talk about the World Cup. First, this is the first time that Canada has been in the World Cup in, I think, 40 years. Is that true?
I can't believe they're in it at all.
Yeah, which is amazing.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Now, the women's teams here always do quite well, which is it's interesting. And I've always said the Canadian women are always better than Canadian men. I'm going to say that from the comfort of my home, far away from other people. But this year, the Canadian team is in the World Cup. The U.S. team is currently, and this is going to date the podcast a little bit, 1-1 against Wales, which is 100 times smaller, of course, than the United States. And it makes me really wonder about what we're doing in the U.S. as far as sports and everything like that. The Welsh are very proud and, very soccer and football preening people, but they're currently probably going to beat the U.S. in this team. But the most interesting about Qatar is that the fact that it's a very deeply anti-gay country.
Yeah.
And just prior to this World Cup, there were gay people raped and arrested by Qatari police. There's been some question about whether the countries that are competing can wear their LGBTQ2A+ flags on their jerseys. And it's been sort of a protest point this year. What do you think about this sort of like protest point as part of sport?
I mean, it's hard because like, I think you said it already, but like all of these like big sporting events, like the Olympics or the World Cup or whatever, I kind of don't think that they should exist anymore, because I think the idea is that they promote like unity between countries, but they're so obviously political, and like, it's very much like used as like a bargaining chip between other countries. And like, I wouldn't say that any of them necessarily have a great record of like picking quote unquote good places to hold these events in. Right. And like Qatar is really bad, like for the gay thing, but also like they only outlawed slavery in the 50s.
Yeah. And it's crazy. Not very clear that it's actually outlawed.
Like, well, it's not actually. I mean, it's technically illegal, right? Like they have a huge problem with like enslaving migrant workers and stuff. And it's like, it's not like, I feel like the gay issue, because of all of the stuff that's happening with like trans people in sports right now and stuff, I feel like people are willing to overlook that. And they're like, oh, whatever, like that doesn't belong in sports. But there's so much other stuff going on in Qatar as well. It's not just the gay thing.
I found that very interesting, because I think that there's something going on with sort of like I will say this as an ally, and I'm going to say it's an ally, but I think there's something going on with sort of the way we discuss politics and power that's been sort of interesting. We're very willing to talk about sort of certain issues, but we're not really willing to talk about sort of the economic issues involved.
Yeah.
And I think that it's really important to call out the homophobia and the repression in Qatar. But I haven't heard many people, especially in the mainstream media, talk about the fact that there's six slaves, basically slaves or workers who are essentially slaves, for every person in Qatar, or the hundreds of people who died building the stadium because they were forced under those conditions. Why do you think that that's the case?
I don't know.
And you don't have to have
you know
an answer.
What? No. I don't know if I should say this. I have a hot take, but I don't know if I should say it.
You should say it.
I think that people in the Western world are afraid to criticize Middle Eastern countries because they don't want it to come off as Islamophobic.
Yeah.
So they won't even read about stuff like that. They don't even want to know because then they would have to think about it.
No, I think that's true. And it's interesting because, like, I don't think that – so the one area that I saw recently where that sort of became an issue was in Dearborn, Michigan. And this will segue into our future discussion of libs of TikTok, is that there were a number of videos of Muslim parents going in and discussing sort of like queer literature in the school curriculum. And one thing I know, because I had the opportunity to work in a library in a sort of a youth facing capacity, like between being a lobbyist and being a podcaster. And is that I don't think libraries are necessarily like deeply connected to the rest of the curriculum. You know, I think that librarians are very good at like maintaining, you know, sort of interesting stuff that kids are interested in. And I think that's a wonderful thing. The fact that it gets pushed out towards like a larger understanding of like how teachers are or whatever seems like a little out of step. But in Michigan, there was a discussion of, you know, like, should things that are queer be taught or, like, accessible in libraries with public education? And a lot of right-wingers who were, like, previously very Islamophobic latched onto this. And it seemed to be, like, this – it pointed out to me that there's definitely some sort of, like, ability to navigate and co-opt certain – identity groups amongst the right that I think the left is missing out on. And I think the left should be more sincere in like their outreach towards different people and their interest in like what they think. But they're like more ephemeral in that way. Like they're not really willing to like acknowledge that people do have faith in that way. And
that's true.
And I think that they're missing out on that. But when I saw that happen, you know, people who, you know, some years ago were talking about Islamofascism and, you know, the introduction into our schools and such, or talking about Ilhan Omar or whatever, it was quite funny to me. What do you think is happening to the left and right on that issue?
Well, something that I think is interesting is, like, I'm sure you've seen this now too, living in Canada, and you have kids that are probably going to start going to school soon-ish, but, like, in Canada, like, the public school is for, like, people who want mainstream education, and then you would pay for your kids to go to a private school or put them in a religious school if you wanted them to have, like, a very specific type of, like, educational values, right? And, like, in Ottawa, I don't know about other places, I'm assuming other major cities are like this too. In Ottawa, we have a Muslim school, and we have a Jewish school, and we have, like mainstream curriculum, but, like, religious institutions.
Yeah.
In the US, like, I have family members there, and it's like the public schools are left for like everybody who can't afford to send their kids to a private school or a charter school, right?
Yeah.
So you have a lot of people who are immigrants or people who are like, well, mostly like immigrants, so like people with like different religious and cultural backgrounds. So there's all of this tension about what's being brought into public schools because it's like everybody who can't afford to go to a private school or whatever. There's no like I don't know. It's just weird. It's like the opposite of in Canada, right?
No, it's really interesting. Like, you know, I'll give you the Newfoundland example. Like when my wife was growing up, there were schools separated by whether you were Catholic or Protestant.
We have that. Oh yeah.
And I thought that
was at Quebec. Yeah.
It was incredibly strange to me because I said, what is this, Northern Ireland? Like, this is nuts to me. And, you know, my wife, who's like very cultured and, you know, has a PhD from Harvard, et cetera, et cetera. Like she said, like, I didn't know many Catholic people. And it, like, you know, like that's other white people growing up. And I found that really interesting because it's not a big place. So, you know, like there's still now there's an English school district. There's a French school district. The French school district here is much smaller, as you might imagine.
I'm sure.
There's still that separation amongst language, and that doesn't count immersion schools, which are not in the French school district, of course. Yeah. And then, but it does separate those people out, and those areas tend to be, you know. And there's a museum here called The Rooms, and it talks about like historical settlements and things like that, and a history of Newfoundland. And the areas that are traditionally Catholic are traditionally Catholic now, and they currently are. And the areas that are traditionally Protestant are Protestant now. And you see that in a way that I've never seen as an American, you know, because essentially it was a white and black thing, right? And because there's not a lot of racial diversity here, it became down to like sectarian. And I think Quebec is similar in that way, and that's changed dramatically in recent times. But there are things going on here that I think that a lot of people, especially Americans, they'd be quite shocked about, you know, and thinking about Quebec in particular.
That's why it's hard for me to like wrap my head around the idea of like what you were talking about with like Muslim parents going to a public school and complaining about what was in the library, because like, I'm not saying that doesn't happen here. Of course it does. But in Ontario, at least, like if you did not want your kids to learn certain things in public school, you would send them to a religious school.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or a private school. Yeah. If and you're the, sending the your kids to public is school funded
by taxpayers.
Yeah, that's, it is. Yeah. 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 And I mean, in Ottawa, at least, like I said, the Muslim school is like technically part of the school board, so like it is funded. It's not like a private school, right? So like there's an expectation that there's like certain things that your kids are going to be exposed to in public schools, and even if you don't agree with it, you're not going to go complain about it.
Yeah I found that extremely interesting, because like the outsider view, and it's probably harder for you to understand as a, like a native Canadian, but it's the outsider view is that Canada is like sort of this beautiful melting pot where everyone gets along and you know, everything is, you know, simpatico. But it's actually like much more, and maybe this is why it works in some ways, and that's a more complicated and sort of like creepy, weird issue, is that, you know, that maybe a little separation does work in some ways. And I you know, it's not my philosophy, but, you know, when I found that there was a Catholic school board and a public school board in Ontario, I was quite shocked.
It is crazy. Yeah. I know my parents growing up in Quebec, there wasn't school boards, obviously, because there wasn't enough people there. They were out in the country, but there was like a French Catholic school, a French Protestant school, an English Catholic school, and an English Protestant school. So you picked one of those.
Are your family, were they Francophone?
My dad is. My mom's first language is English, but they're both bilingual.
Mixed marriage. That's very complicated.
Mixed marriage. Separatist and not separatist.
Yeah, I think that's pretty interesting. So one of the things I was talking about, just to go back to the World Cup, is that, you know, I think that people, it's one of those, I think we're at a point we're starting to see, and I think Twitter is part of this. This is part of like the sort of like global dialogue and like sort of the demise of the commons. But we're seeing, you know, the fact that money can kind of take over spaces.
Yeah.
And all these things that people say, we have these like diversity, inclusion, and equity, inclusion sort of statements that everybody has. We saw the president of FIFA talk about, I'm a gay, I'm a lesbian, I'm a, you know, all these different things, you know, in a Andrew Cuomo
style way. We are the world. Yeah.
We are the world. You know, I am the world. I'm every woman, he said. Yeah. And it was quite funny to me because, you know, it is a money making industry. And it's like, it's been, you know, people in FIFA have been arrested for being, you know, corrupt. And now we're in a situation where people are saying, like, you can't criticize like where this corporation is putting their World Cup, because you're being culturally insensitive.
Exactly.
And, you know, It's quite funny.
Yeah, it's always it's just weird how like people are okay with industries or like even specific soccer teams being like, oh, we support gay people, but then not pulling out of the World Cup because they can't. It's all about the money, right? So it's like we shouldn't even be expecting people to make statements on whether they support gay people or not if it's just to make you feel better, because they obviously don't actually, right? It's just stop expecting people to make statements about it.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's like it goes back to the Pride Month and, you know, and right-wingers bring this up a lot, but I actually think like the left should talk about this a little bit more. It'll be like BMW and they'll have like their Pride flag and it'll be BMW Europe, BMW UK, BMW US, and it'll be all Pride flag, BMW Saudi Arabia, regular logo.
Just normal. You
know? Yeah, normal logo. So it's, it's very interesting. So if you're listening to this, I just wanted to say that you can find us on patreon.com/thepopularshow. We could really use your help. We are always trying to bring you interesting people like Sophie Hayes, comedian, and all around culturally adroit, brilliant person. Go to popularshow.com/ Well, no, that's not how it works. It's patreon.com/thepopularshow. Sophie, let's talk a little bit about one of our favorite shows. We talked about this before.
Please.
Love is Blind.
Amazing.
So can you give us a little bit of a background about what is Love is Blind and why you think it's interesting and important?
So Love is Blind, I would want to call it a reality show, but the hosts of the show are very clear that it's an experiment. It's not a competition. It's a reality show where people date behind a wall. So they get paired up with random men or women for like, I think it's 5 days. And then if they feel a connection with someone that they've never seen before, then they have to propose. And if they accept the proposal, then they get to see each other in real life and spend like 3 weeks together before the wedding, basically.
So I have a question for you.
Yeah.
What is preventing people from slipping the other people a number?
Right. Well, that's the thing is they don't actually have, you can't see each other, but they literally like they're allowed to describe themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's really funny because people will ask like leading questions to like try and get like information about someone. Like they'll be like, I love going for hikes. What do you think about that?
I think that actually this is actually the going for hikes thing has been a big discourse issue.
Yeah.
I actually do really like going for hikes. Like I go for hikes regularly. It's probably like my main form of actual exercise. And I should probably lift weights. I should do yoga. I should stretch more. But I live near a hiking trail. I go for hikes. And, when I lived in DC, going for hikes was sort of a screening question for like, do you have a healthy lifestyle?
Right.
And I've seen some sort of fat activists talk about this and say like, is this like a skinny screening, you know?
I don't think it is. I think it depends on where you live. If hiking isn't accessible, maybe it is. It's like a dog whistle, but you don't have to be fit to enjoy being outside.
No, not at all. And the other thing is, I wanted to ask you, it's like, is it racist?
Oh, God, don't even get me started. No.
So there's like a lot of discussions in the last sort of 3 or 4 years about like what cultural thing. And I think partially there's a commercial interest in discussing these things. Like people want to be outraged. They want to be mad. You know, people are like hemmed up in their house. They're not interacting with other people. It's very important to people to sort of like find a piece of ground to stand on or not stand on, depending on how you are and what your ability is. But it's been really interesting to see sort of the discourse about like fitness and things like that. I am a person who I would describe as fit in my soul, not always in my body. And so like I straddle that sort of realm between like, I like to eat a lot of wings and drink some beer and I'd like to eat some I go for some hikes and, you know, eat a granola bar. And it's, funny for me, someone who like straddles that, you know, like sort of, I'm in a liminal space between a fit person and a fatty, and to see like these sort of absolute discussions about that. And I don't know how you feel about that, but that's kind of like where I'm at.
Yeah, I think it's, I don't know, it's hard because I feel like we're just like barely missing the mark of like, you can do whatever you want and also look however you want. So people, a lot of people like obviously feel like defensive because they think people aren't going to be attracted to them or whatever. So they're like, oh, they're like asking me questions about whether I like hiking because they want to know if I'm fat. But it's like, you don't have to be skinny to like hiking, but if hiking is a really big part of somebody's life, like it's a very polarizing activity, right? Some people hate hiking and some people love hiking. So if you don't like hiking, they're not going to want to go on a date with you, and it might not have anything to do with the way you look.
It's like
asking if you like, I don't know, like rock climbing, if that's like someone's whole
rock
thing.
Climbing is deeper.
It's it is, but
to be honest,
I'm trying to think of something else.
I'm not criticizing related. Your example. But I think one of the things is like, there's two ways that people could approach I like hiking.
Yeah,
you could say this is a person who's filtering me out, or this is a person who likes nature, outside beauty, like not drinking. Like that's like
what I was gonna say. Yeah.
Yeah. It's actually like something that people are signaling a lot of different things, and people fail to recognize that, like, you know, you can't like implicate people for not understanding like what your feelings about that particular issue are, you know.
Exactly, right? Like it's like how, you know, there's that joke about like guys are always posting photos of themselves holding fish or killing things on Tinder, and like I've had friends show me people's profiles before, and it does happen a lot, but at the same time, it's like, is there anything wrong with that? Or like, do you want to date this person anyways? Like you want to date someone who has similar interests to you. Yeah. So it doesn't really hurt anybody for someone to
show
what their interests are. Right.
And the funny thing I was thinking about the fish thing is it's, I think that like, there's like, just to go deep on that, is that like, okay, so you like to be outside. That's nice. You like food. Right? Everybody likes food, right? That's nice. You like fresh food, right? There's like a lot of different ways to read that. And I think there's something about online has made people less charitable to each other.
Yes.
And I think that's one of the more interesting aspects of that, because I think it's like, okay, this guy likes, but also like, it's someone who's like willing to like drive somewhere, be somewhere else. Like those skills are like applicable to different things. And we, you know, in this sort of neoliberal world, you know, when you apply for a new job, you say like, well, I've never done that specific thing. We need 5 years of CRM or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
We often see that like, that's bad. But like when we're dealing with people interpersonally, we're like applying that same like neoliberal, like skills-based training to like our dating life.
And it's like, I think the other thing about online dating is that it's become, it like kind of like exacerbates people's tendency to have like a checklist of things that you're looking for in a relationship, and being like, oh, I want this, but not that. And if like in real life, a lot of the time, something that you may not normally like, you realize actually isn't a negative, depending on the person and depending what the context is. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I was just talking about this with my wife. I was talking about, I actually like Harry Potter, which is like quite embarrassing. And it is
no comment. You
know, like J.K. Rowling's a turf, whatever. But I like it when I'm sick. So like, okay. I like to watch. It's because I need something like formulaic and something that's like, okay, everything's gonna be okay.
Yeah.
So it's not that I actually like it, like per se.
It's predictable.
It's predictable. And so we've had COVID of the three times we've had COVID in the last 2 years. I'll put it on. And she said, and she told me the other day, she's like, actually, you know, before you, I had only watched one Harry Potter, and I fell asleep in the theater in Berlin. It's like a good friend of ours. And she said, I just simply couldn't watch it. But I understand. And she said, you know, after 2 years of, you know, being married, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, it's been a while.
It's been a while. Oh, man. Like 4 years, hasn't it?
It is.
was like, I know.
Arisa, we had the kids. It's been very quick. Yeah. But she said, you know, like, I actually get, like, why you like the repetition, et cetera, et cetera. And I realized that, like, had I put that on a dating, and we met, you know, like, through Twitter and sort of podcasting.
Yeah.
Had I put that on a dating profile, she would have moved right past me.
Well, and at the same time, it's like, do you want someone who's like, if you put, I like Harry Potter movies on your profile, do you want to date someone who's like, oh my God, I love Harry Potter?
No,
or do you want to be with someone who, like, doesn't care that you like Harry Potter, right? Like,
no, never. And in when I was dating, I didn't put that on my profile.
It's not a
personality. The people I met who liked Harry Potter, I didn't like.
Yeah, exactly.
As a comedian, I'll give you a funny comedian story for when I was dating. I briefly was doing open mics in D.C. probably for about a year. And I decided I just didn't have, at the time, I just didn't have the guts for it. But I went on one date with a woman who's like, I love comedy. I was like, yeah, let's talk about comedy, blah, blah, blah. And this is when I was like deep in the throes and kind of interested in it. And prior to me, she had dated Dan Harmon, if you know Dan Harmon.
Okay, yeah.
And the entire thing, she talked about Dan Harmon, which is very funny. And I was like
awesome. Yeah, I know Dan Harmon, yeah. That's so funny.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, a guy I know who does comedy here, he has been working on this joke about dating someone who is a Disney adult.
Yes.
Like, yeah. An adult woman who is obsessed with Disney and, like, whatever. I'm not going to give away the joke, but basically he dated this woman who has a thigh tattoo of Mickey and Minnie kissing each other on the lips, like, in full color. And he was like, I don't know how I convinced myself that I loved this person.
No, it's my first interaction with Disney adults, and I didn't grow up with Disney, so it's funny, yeah, because now I have kids, and, you know, like, they like to watch movies, and Disney's a broader sort of, they have a lot of different IP now.
Everything's Disney.
Like, today, I watched the remake of Mary Poppins. It was Mary Poppins Returns, Emily Blunt, Lin-Manuel Miranda, who I normally find quite distasteful, was in it, but he was quite good, and it was a really good movie, and it didn't do well, right? It was for some reason, but it was beautifully shot, and it was the director who did Chicago, which I quite like, as sort of like a gay presenting heterosexual male. I really like musicals quite a bit. I did show choir in high school and
nice.
I did choir in college. But what was interesting about it was, you know, I didn't know it was Disney, but when I first interacted with someone Disney, I was in a communications class in college, and our college had a exchange program with Disney.
And oh, so okay. Yes.
Semester in DC.
Yeah. Doing Disney. That intersection of people who want to go to college in DC and people that want to do the Disney college are like, it's a circle.
That's a really interesting. And the funny thing about that was that everyone who came back from Disney were really depressed, right? And it was because they saw how the meat was made. And, you know, like, I don't know what they did when they were down there. I don't know if they did scheduling or you know, what kind of spreadsheets or they dressed up in a costume. But they came back extremely depressed. And what was interesting to me, it was like if you had done an internship at the Catholic Church, right? And you're like a big Catholic person. And, you know, I grew up Catholic. I'm not a Catholic now. But the sort of disenchantment that the people came back, and I had a partner who is for a communications class, my senior year that I took. It was like, I was already like accepted to law school. I was just trying to move on and, like, you know, it's just like peace now. And, I was sort of counseling this young man, about his sort of like withdrawal from Disney. And it was very funny for me because I, at the time, I was like kind of an abrasive asshole. But I was like, oh, this guy is like really
having a bad time.
And it was one of the most sympathetic times in my early 20s. And I thought, like, oh my God, like, this is really horrible. And I realized that, like, in this, you know, as sort of a Marxist or like a neo-Marxist or some kind of sort of, you know, socialist, I found it later to be very informative to me, because I said, you know, like, when you put your belief in, like, sort of these institutions that are outside of, like, totally, like, caring about you, you have to be, like, really, really careful about where your heart goes, right? And, like, that's where I went with that. One of the things that, you know, and I'm gonna use that as a segue, that sort of really bothers me about, like, things about Love is Blind and all those types of things, is I see people sort of, like, offering themselves up on the altar of, like, media.
Yeah.
And I guess we're both doing that right now, but
I guess
and on, like, some, like, very, like, smaller scale. What do you think about, like, what does it mean if you're the type of person who goes on a dating reality show?
I've been thinking about this, and, like, the thing that I can't get out of my head about it is that anybody you ever date for the rest of your life is going to be able to watch that.
Yeah.
And not just that, you're going to have to explain to other people why, you know, like, let's say you're in a relationship with someone and you're like, oh, I'm in love with you. And they're like, well, are you actually, or do you just think you are because you fell in love with somebody after a week when you were on a reality show? So, like, how do you actually know what being in love is, right? Yeah. Like,
yeah, that's interesting.
It undermines your character as a person, I think.
So, okay. And I'm going to ask you a very complicated question here.
Yes.
One, is that a heteronormative sort of perception? So I get it, and I'll explain that now. I was thinking about this the other day, and I was thinking about how men often will discount. I was in a sort of group chat with some friends from home, and they mentioned someone we knew and blah blah blah, and they essentially were like, oh yeah, I, you know, I yeah. had done that or what, you know, whatever. Yeah. It's inappropriately, and it just sort of, like, gross, you know, like, but then they can apologize, like, it was funny because it was like they slipped back into high school and they were like, well, yeah, she's really nice, and we, you know, she's like,
but a also good person. Yeah.
And, like, it was funny because to see them slide between those sort of, like, characteristics of personhood. And I think women, particularly heterosexual women, and I can't speak for lesbian women, and I don't know if you can exactly, because I think it's not fair to speak for everyone, but I think women are often characterized about who they've been with in ways that men are not.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that may actually be even worse in the lesbian community in some way.
Definitely. The thing that I think is bad about the whole reality TV show dating thing is, like, yes, women are very much subjected to, like, being judged based on, like, who they've been with in the past. But I think that this type of thing can actually be really problematic for the guys that go on it, because men are, like, characterized as not being emotional. So if they're showing emotion on national television and then it doesn't work out and they go and date someone else, it's going to be like, oh, well, are you just manipulating me because you act like that with everybody? Yeah. And, like, men aren't supposed to show emotion except for, like, you know what I mean? So it's like, oh, it's not special. You do that with everybody, right? Like, you're a male manipulator.
Yeah, that's actually really interesting because, you know, I won't get into specifics, but I actually do really understand that because...
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, like, if you met someone and you realized they'd been engaged 5 times...
Exactly.
Say,
yeah.
Well, what's different here? Like, what's going on here, right?
How do I know that it's different?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think that, you know, documenting that, and, like, it makes you ask, like, so today, like, and we're going to have, like, a real candid moment right now for our listeners. today we had the opportunity to record visually, and we made the choice because we were both feeling like we didn't want to do it. Like, you know, it was not, you know, Sophie looks lovely, like, as usual. She's gorgeous as usual. Great. She's all put together. I was not feeling it, you know, because I said, you know what? I'm excited to talk to Sophie. We're having this podcast. I love it. Every time I get to talk to her, it's a joy. But I didn't feel like I was presenting properly. And I was thinking about that. It like, if you have to be in that environment, like, you know, like, you know, like the subjectivity of that is so strange that I don't know if you can you make it out after that?
Well, that's the thing, is it's like, you know, a lot of these people, obviously, like, I think the only way to go about it with these shows is, like, you have to be doing it for the fame or for the publicity, because, like, if you're actually doing it for love, like, you're going to fuck your whole life up. But yeah, a lot of these people, like, they don't really have an Instagram following, or they, like, aren't already kind of, like, popular online or whatever. And it's, like, even to a small degree, if you have, like, followers or people that listen to a podcast, like, you have so many, like, weird, no offense to any listeners, but, like, like, parasocial relationships. And, like, getting thrown into that when you don't know what it's like at all is, like, can really, like, fuck with someone. So I think a lot of these people don't realize, like, how horrible it is to, like, read negative stuff about you online, or, like, yeah, people calling you, like, a bitch, calling you ugly, yeah, calling you fat, like, or just, like, looking up information about you online and, like, yeah, finding every single piece of information about you that's ever been on there, right?
Yeah.
They don't know that all those things are actually going to happen, or what it's going to feel like.
No, yeah, that's incredible. I have to say, like, in you know, just like at like a very, 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 like, low level of, like, public exposure. And yeah, it's funny because I'll give you an example, a comparison. So when I ran for the state representative in my hometown, mm-hmm, some years ago, it was like 26, and I was very earnest about it, and I ran a very good campaign, and I almost won. But I was very young. I was unmarried, you know, yeah, like, people thought I was gay, cause, you know, which at the time was 20.
Fair.
Actually, maybe it would have helped in 10 years later or whatever, but maybe it didn't at the time. And it was very quite funny to me, because there was an anonymous call-in section of the local newspaper.
Okay.
Oh, my God. And the things that people would write about me were
yeah, quite right?
brutal. And they would write, like, I went to high school with David and he's an idiot, or some, you know, some sort of stuff. And I was like, well, I that's not true. But I was, like, also thinking, well, someone who went to high school with me thought about me.
You know, you're like, who is it? Yeah.
Who is it? And after a time, I came to either enjoy it or ignore it. Right. But anytime you put yourself out there, it's quite something. And I don't think that was the case 15, 20 years ago. Right. You know, like, it's quite different. And now we're in this sort of digital realm. Like, I was on someone's podcast with a California politician who was running in for the governor a few years ago.
Okay.
And we just talked about running as a politician and things like that. And I clearly had not won. I probably wouldn't be here. I'd be in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Yeah, right. But someone wrote, you know, like, he lost and he's an idiot, right? Like, it was someone, yeah, like, who I knew. And I was like, well, yeah, clearly that's in the interview. I lost. That's what I'm talking about. And it was funny to me, because I was like, how dare you? You don't put yourself out there. You know, it's like, you know, like, people get mad about things, but, like, you know, there's these people put themselves out there. That's why, like, when I watch things like Love is Blind or The Ultimatum, which I actually find to be a more compelling sort
of show. They're doing a gay season of The Ultimatum.
Oh, that's excellent. So
apparently.
Can you explain The Ultimatum? Because I found – so, I get them confused, because the host is the same host.
Yeah.
And but the Ultimatum is essentially a show where people who are at the brink of getting married or being in a more permanent relationship or having kids or moving in or whatever, go on a show and they have to spend time with another person.
Yeah.
And then determine whether or not they're going to settle down. And I felt it to be, like, the most brutal and grueling show I've ever watched in my life.
It was horrible.
And because I thought, it was like, if you have to go on a show to determine whether you want to stay with someone, you probably shouldn't or wouldn't, you know. Like, the second thing I found weird is how young people were. Like, it's like a 26 year old person, or it was often a younger man with an older woman, which I thought was interesting.
Some of the girls were like 23 and they were like, why aren't I pregnant yet?
Because you have good sense. That's why.
Yeah, you can't get pregnant, you're too young.
Yeah. Yeah, and I thought that was interesting because it's like there's something like very liberating about like going on a show and like exposing yourself and things like that. But there's something like very traditional about like the mentalities, right? You know, like, and that can go sort of back to left and right discourse. It's like there's sort of a right discourse where you have to like be tried and like you have to do your case early and you have to have a bunch of them. And then and then there's sort of a left discourse, you know, like the like abolish the family situation or whatever. And like as someone who's like, really didn't want to do those things and now does those things. And I think my wife is in the same situation where,
same, yeah.
You know, like we're like, oh, never settle down. That's awful. I'm never doing that. You could be very left and be very trad in some ways. And you could also like be a total trad and like not have love. I mean, I think that's normal too.
Cheat on your wife.
Oh, that's yes. Right. That's
sorry.
That's, very common.
I think that the problem with like the left though is that so much of it is like trying to control or change things that you think are like indicative of like right politics or conservatism that like, you know, it's like, oh, we need to abolish the family. So like anybody who wants to get married and settle down and have kids is like not aligned with leftist politics or like, yeah. If you actually believe these things, then you would be polyamorous or whatever. And it's like, yeah. We need to embrace people can do whatever they want.
Yeah.
To obviously a certain degree, but you know, in your personal life, like if you're not doing things that are like illegal or like actively harming other people, then it doesn't mean that you're not a leftist.
Yeah. No, it's really interesting. And we see this like let's go, you know, we could talk a little bit about, I know you're not a crypto expert, but we have talked about this briefly.
Personally.
But there was the recent FTX scandal, which is this FTX was a it's an exchange, like a sort of internet exchange for coins of like Bitcoin and things like that, sort of a crypto exchange.
It's like a software.
It's a website that has so I'll explain it more specifically in brief, but it's essentially it was a website that had many sort of investors from across the sort of like, you know, spectrum of like financial interests. Like, so the Ontario Teachers Association pension fund had invested a large amount of money in this very scammy sort of organization.
That's
that psycho. Was, you know, selling, cryptocurrencies on exchange. They had essentially embezzled billions of dollars and then lost billions of dollars. They were operating out of Bermuda. It was a number of like people sort of in their 20s and early 30s. They were a polycule who, who had sort of like an ethical non-monogamy situation. They were taking a lot of stimulants, a lot of SSRIs, you know, sort of like just really maxing it out.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah. It does in part. But the interesting thing about it was that they were really interesting in this sort of like idea of like effective altruism. And that was like, you know, how to use your power and wealth to do the most in the world. And the way they did that was essentially to donate to Democratic campaigns, which, you know, is interesting because it was like the people who were most likely to regulate cryptocurrency were Democrats. And here we are. Giving to Democrats, and we have no regulations on the cryptocurrencies, right? And but they also like sort of like colored their sort of lifestyle in this sort of like leftist sexual liberation. And it was quite funny to me because I thought, you know, like there's nothing like sort of less leftist than like privatizing and like denationalizing currency into some sort of corporate structure. But there's also something like, you know, like non-commitment is not a leftist like sort of ideal. Like, I mean, people have it like in the way they do. And there is ethical non-monogamy, and it's not for me. And I don't think it's for you or many of our listeners, but
yeah,
like, it does exist. But it's not typically leftist in itself, historically, like, you know, right wingers with money were the people who had ethically non-monogamous relationships, like, you know, like you had a mistress or whatever, and your wife,
yeah, and who spent all your money.
Yeah, and she knew about it. Yeah, she knew about it, right?
Well, that's the thing, is it's like, I feel like that whole, like, the, like, ethical non-monogamy and, like, the labeling of it is kind of, like, it is, like, neoliberal, because it's, like, people are, like, requiring themselves to, like, label what they're doing and being, like, actually, it's, like, better than what you're doing for this reason. And it's, like, it's not just, like, it's all about, like, the label and the aesthetics of it and, like, what it means in comparison to, like, what other people are doing and why it's right or wrong.
Yeah, and I think one of the things about, like, sort of online culture is that, like, people need – not only do you need to, like, have multiple partners, you need other people to know it and other people to approve of it.
Yes.
You know, like, whereas in the past, like, in the 70s, where, you know, when the Coke was good and, you know, people had sunk in living rooms where they're awesome, like, you know, like, they just didn't tell people, and they, you know, they swung and did whatever. But, like, now people want you to be like, yes, you're anointed and the church are woke. And I think that's quite interesting.
People have whole podcasts about it now.
Yes, yeah, they absolutely do.
Especially in Canada.
Yeah. Now, one of the things I wouldn't ask you is, you know, Canada seems to be sort of like the edge of the dissident right and also the edge of sort of cancel culture.
Yeah.
We not too long ago, we had a writer in Toronto talk about, you know, how white people shouldn't drink pho. Or eat pho, which is, like, one of my favorite foods, or, you know,
that's
like,
amazing.
It's not for you, et cetera, et cetera. And one of the things I was laughing about, like, in that sort of culture, like, discussion was, like the people who, when you go into a store and you're you know, like a restaurant regularly, as I did, and one weekend when my wife was out of town, she was in New York, recording some podcasts and doing some lectures in New York City, I went to, like, 20 pho restaurants in my
I did
like a whole thing, like, I went in because Toronto's got really great Asian food, and I had lunch, breakfast, and dinner at a pho restaurant for 2 weeks, and
I well, you're doing racism
it was not a racism at all. I just really like pho, and I think I might have had early COVID. I'm going to be honest with you.
I was going to say.
I had a lot of drainage. But it was interesting because people were, like, very welcoming. They're like, hey, thanks for coming in. And there was a few places that I went to, especially, like, places where, like, no one spoke English at all, where they were, like, really happy to see me again. Like, they're like, hey, this is the guy. He really appreciates our food. And there's that edge, and then there's the other edge of Canada, which is, like, sort of this reactionary right. And I want to know, what is it about Canada that makes everybody a reactionary left and right?
Lack of cultural identity, I guess. It's like how – no, but it's like, you know, how there was that whole study done about, like white Canadian guys in their early 20s being radicalized and going to join ISIS, right? Yeah. Like, obviously that happened in other countries too, but there was a lot of people, like, Canadian guys that did that. And, like, I know someone whose friend did that.
ISIS?
Yeah. Really? I'll message you about it later. But
No, you don't have to.
No. It's a, yeah, no, I, but, like, I know someone who grew up with a guy that joined ISIS. So, like, I think it's, like, a lack of like, cultural identity. People have to, like, latch on to something.
Yeah, that's – so that – as a former Ontarian, I understand that. As a current Newfoundlander, I don't understand that. I don't think there's a lot of Newfoundlanders doing that because people are – I would say there's not a lot of rural Newfoundlanders doing that. But I think maybe in St. John's there are because
– Yes, yeah.
There are, like – these sort of situations in more rural aspects, places in Canada where, like, the city people are like, I gotta reject, you know, this sort of cultural milieu. Ontario is interesting because, like, it is about 50% sort of agricultural, rural, et cetera, et cetera. But then it has, like, this sort of city vibe. And the city people, I don't know why they're just not happy because the food's so good. Because you have every culture in the world. And there's the better immigration laws here. So, like, there's all sorts of different cuisines you can't get in the U.S.
Interesting food, yeah.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. Like, you know, last meal I remember having in Toronto before you moved was a Hakka cuisine place. And it was like nice. Just absolutely Tibetan food and Hakka cuisine. It was some of the best stuff in the world. And it was just a random place, right? But what I don't understand is, like, in the States, in places that are multicultural, the kids sort of lean into that. Why doesn't that happen in Canada?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know. What do you think? You're kind of an outsider, and you've lived in two provinces. But
I think it's like the
Protestant, like, undercurrent yes. of Canada, right? Like the WASPy kind of, like, buttoned up. Everybody keep to yourself. Like, don't ask about what's happening in other people's houses.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I actually think that that's really interesting, because the United States is like nominally a WASPy country, like in its founding, but there was a sort of like melange of sort of like Catholic immigrants that changed how it worked, and the sort of like Catholic cultures here are a little different in that. You know, in places like Newfoundland, it's largely Irish, and this is sort of an ethno state. It's like a British Isles ethno state. but like in places like Quebec, it also an ethno state, but the Catholicism is like sort of exclusionary because they're sort of defining their Frenchness against the world, right? But in the States, there was, you know, sort of in immigrant communities, there was sort of like, hey, you make pierogies, I make raviolis. Like, you know, we're all a little weird. Those white people are awful. Their food's bad. Like, we're not going to do that, right? So there was sort of a mix there. But I don't know how it is. Like if you go to like a downtown Toronto school, I'm sure all those kids are like eating at each other's houses and having great food. Like, yeah, that's true.
Definitely.
But as you move out towards the suburbs, I think that there is sort of like a racial separation that is probably even strange for the US.
Let me know what you think about this. Newfoundland. Do you feel like people in Newfoundland like Ukrainians and Chinese people because it's mostly an Irish province and they're like, we were all slaves too?
Okay.
Because I was talking to Ev about this and she was like, yeah, people in Newfoundland love Chinese girls.
So that's very interesting. Newfoundlanders often, they really do like the underdog, like, because it's an under, it's an underdog province. Like it wasn't part of Canada until like the
50s.
Didn't
they like not even sign the constitution until like way later than that?
It was much later. Like, yeah, absolutely. it's really a separate place. And despite being here prior to Canada, like in a lot of ways. And, so they really do root for the underdog, and they also like really view themselves as being welcoming. Like that's part of the culture. Like that's very important.
I hate that.
We'll talk about that. Okay. But as my therapist says, let's revisit that. But so what's interesting is that as a white cis male American immigrant, I've met a lot of sort of like French, like actual people from France, immigrants, people from Somalia, all different places, and we've all like really bonded. We're like, yeah, it's like they're like really welcoming here. Like when I was in Toronto, like people were like, oh, you're an American, fine. Like what you're like,
nobody cares.
They don't care about you at all, like in general. But here they're like, oh, that's great. Where are you from? They ask actually like, where in the US are you from? And they're like, oh, that's great. Like, what kind of food do you guys eat? You know, like,
what's it like there?
Yeah, like, it's like there. It's been wonderful. And, I was at a playground talking to, an Ethiopian, singer and dancer. This guy was like a professional singer. He goes back to Ethiopia and does performances. Nice. And we talked about like, yeah, man, it's great. You know, and like people are very welcoming. They're like, what can I do for you? And I think one that has to do with the fact that like, it's not, there's like a threshold of diversity here, right?
Yeah.
There's not that many people. So they're like, okay, cool. That's great. But also like it's rough to live here. Like it's cold,
fair.
It's windy, like, the soil is not great. Like, you know, like it's, everybody has to pull together. So like once you're here, they're like, you're one of us. It's great. But I don't know if that's the case across Canada. And it makes me think a little bit in, to go back to the Ukrainian thing, is like apparently there's been 15,000 Ukrainians who've settled in Newfoundland, which is like a lot. We only have 500,000 people here. That's a lot. I haven't run into anybody, which is quite strange because I live in the populated area of the province. But it is interesting to see sort of like how the integration works. But one of the funnier things here is to see some of the Chinese immigrants who came here probably in the 50s or 60s. And my dentist in particular has a thick Newfoundland accent. And it's, you're like, I'm sorry, what? You know, it's very interesting to see like the level of integration here.
It's interesting. Like I moved like an hour outside of Ottawa, right? It's a small town. It's not far from Ottawa, but I do notice the difference. And like, we have a community Facebook group and people are always complaining about the town is getting too big. People are moving here from other places. We don't need that restaurant because people here don't like that kind of food.
Oh, really?
That's very coded, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Tons of Ukrainian
That's so Ontario.
Came here and they're like, welcome to Canada, Ukrainian immigrants. We hope you love it here because you're white, right? Yeah. And it's just like, we had a Vietnamese sub place that closed because they own two businesses. So they were going to operate it out of one place. But when the Vietnamese sub place closed, somebody was like, well, nobody here likes that kind of food.
That's awful. That's really interesting. Cause like I think that's a Canadian issue. Like, one of the things that people, and the Ukrainian issue is like more complicated than I think we can get into, but the Canadians like really pride themselves on sort of their acceptance and their cultural sort of acumen and being better than Americans, but yet they're very supportive of sort of like a particular type of Ukrainian separatism that is quite racist and doesn't really represent what I call Canadian values. And that extends to our deputy prime minister, who is very supportive of like separatist movements in Ukraine that I think are Nazis, you know, and other people may think are Nazis. There's actually like more monuments to Nazis in Canada than there are in any countries in Eastern Europe or Germany, which is quite something. There was a hate crime prosecution over someone who had defaced a Nazi monument in Canada, which in Ontario, which I thought was quite telling.
Do you know that there's a town in Ontario called Swastika, Ontario?
I'm sorry?
There's a town in Ontario called Swastika.
Go ahead. So if you could go on while we talk about this, but I am going to furiously Google this while I figure out what...
Well, I knew that because where I used to work, we had a large population of our clients that lived there, which is random.
Yeah.
But like during the Second World War, a lot of towns in Ontario specifically renamed themselves because they had names that were associated with Germany.
Yes, exactly.
Like Waterloo, Ontario. I forget what they used to be called. They changed their name during the war. But Swastika, Ontario elected to keep theirs because they said, well, it wasn't always a Nazi symbol.
So what's really interesting about, so I'm looking at the Wikipedia right now. I had not known this. As someone who lives in Newfoundland, I live a few miles from a place, or kilometers, so we're in Canada, from a place called Dildo. I live near a place called Hearts Delight, Hearts Desire. There's a lot of sort of sexualized names of towns here. For our patrons at patreon.com/thepopularpod, I will be doing a rendition of a sexy story I did about a road trip through Newfoundland that integrates all of the dirty names. And I'll do this for you later. Sophie, just for your own edification. But it's quite funny and it's quite interesting. But I recommend people go and Google Swastika Ontario, just to figure it out. That's quite interesting. But yeah, you're right. Just to go back to the Ukrainian thing is that there is an embrace of those types of, like, I view many people as viewing Eastern Europeans as the last real whites.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, we'll take those, the last real whites. I don't want to,
French people. I don't want, and they're hard workers.
And they're hard workers. Yeah, because they're the last real whites. Yeah. Yeah. It's really quite something. And and I say this as a Ukrainian American, you know?
Yeah.
So my middle name is Dimitri. But
is it actually?
It is, yeah.
Nice.
It is. But it's my grandfather's name. He came from Ukraine, et cetera.
Okay, that makes
but,
sense.
You know, so that is really interesting. And I that is sort of the mix of sort of Canadian culture. It's like we're the most diverse nation in some ways. And also we really are sort of a white nationalist nation in other ways. One of the things I wanted to discuss with you before we part, and we've run a little long, but I appreciate you staying with me, is, you know, sort of the cultural backlash and to sort of gay and lesbian and queer culture that we've seen on the right, across the sort of European spectrum. You know, and that, you know, that's our standpoint epistemology. We can discuss that. I can't really discuss what that's like in Asia or Africa or et cetera, yeah. et cetera. But we've seen sort of a new resurgence and a new rebranding of homophobia in the West as a political issue. It hasn't, you know, I looked up some statistics on how people were voting in the midterms and what helped and what didn't help. It didn't really help the Republicans, actually. You know, there's a lot of discussion about
whether it helps. Okay, that's
interesting. Yeah. So there was a Pew poll recently that discussed why people voted Republican or not, or voted Democrat. And the red meat was, you know, as they say, was very sort of downstream. My theory is that some of these red meat issues about queer people and trans issues and drag shows and things like that are actually about rallying up sort of the engine of the base. Like, it's not about
it's not actually about that.
Yeah. I think it's like by providing those people, like, we're not providing you with actually like any material interests that help you. We're not actually getting you jobs, those type of things, but we are, you know, we're fighting these sort of issues. Right. And it's, the fact that the Democrats didn't get annihilated despite their, like, mishandling of the economy, their sort of strange and divergent views towards COVID, and, you know, like, the way that they dealt with things like student loan forgiveness, where they, like, sort of did it, sort of didn't do it. The stimulus checks where, like, we're giving you, you're going to get $2,000 if you vote for us. And then they're like, actually, you get $600, you know, like, all these.
Hope that's okay.
Stuff, you know, it's all fine. And then the people telling you you're an asshole for pointing it out. But despite all that, the Democrats did rather well because the Republicans pushed on cultural issues. But we still see these cultural issues around queer issues be pushed forward. What do you think about that? Why?
Sorry, one sec. I'm going to grab my dog. Yeah. What's up? Why are you crying? Aww.
So for our listeners out there, there is a very small dog who is young and beautiful. It's a rescue dog, I believe. That's right.
Yeah, she's from Texas.
She's from Texas.
She hates gay people.
She hates gay people?
Yeah.
Which kind?
The men. male gay people.
Who doesn't hate men?
She's a bioessentialist.
Yeah, that's the last acceptable criticism of people, is if you hate men. But right. I also had a rescue dog. He was a little skittish. It was a half rat terrier, half chihuahua,
nice.
From Texas. And I had two dogs from Texas who were rescues. Texas is a bad place for dogs.
It is, yeah. She's a Chihuahua wiener dog mix. So
yeah. So not too fat. So for our listeners, I just want to explain that this is not a fat wiener dog. It is a trim and beautiful. And if you're a Chihuahua owner or an enthusiast, this is a deer-headed Chihuahua, which yes. are the more well-behaved and less vicious of the Chihuahuas. That's They're right. very comforting and loving. They're a little emotionally needy.
The vet said that she had great body composition.
Beautiful dog. Absolutely beautiful dog. This is a deer-colored dog, a little reddish, beautiful ears, perked up. Absolutely beautiful. People say that you look like your dogs. Do you think you look like your dog?
I don't think I do yet, but I'm hoping I'll get her bone structure, her jaw definition.
Maybe she'll end up looking like me. Three dogs, the only dog I looked like was the three-legged dog that I had taught to walk. And that dog is now passed. So here we are. So we were just to return yes. to our prior topic. But I think that all the dog listeners out there, please go to patreon.com/thepopularpod and please support the show. And I'll tell you more stories about teaching my three-legged dog to walk.
I'm very curious.
We just talked about sort of the new resurgence of gay panic yes. in politics. What do you think that's about, and how do you think it's actually affecting people in the real world?
I mean, well, that like, I feel like it's hard because I feel like people don't think it really affects people in the real world because they're like, oh, like gay rights are over. Like we did it. If people hate you, that's just like their opinion and it doesn't really mean anything. But then you have people shooting up nightclubs and like attacking gay people and killing trans people. So it's like all of that like rhetoric that's even just like people just talking about it online, like not to be like words or violence, but like it normalizes like that idea, right? And then it comes out in real ways.
Yeah.
Especially in the US where you can just have a gun. Yeah.
Exactly. I had this discussion with my wife the other day. We were talking about stand your ground laws and what that really meant. And
just watched something on Netflix about that.
I had to ask her, and she's a law professor of criminal law, and I said, if someone comes into her house, can I hit them with a brick? And she's like, well, she's like, that's complicated. And I said, what do you mean it's complicated? They're in our house. And so I'm still not sure what to do. So as a new Canadian, I'm going to ask them politely to leave if anything happens.
Let her hit them with a brick.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. But that's interesting. And I think that goes back to, you know, sort of this idea of you know, Twitter and what's happening with Twitter. We're seeing some changes. I don't know if they're real changes in Twitter. I haven't seen much change in my, you know, sort of interaction with it. But there's something called Libs of TikTok, and it's a site that had started to point out sort of like weird people or, you know, like sort of divergent people on TikTok who are talking about their gender identity or, you know,
mental sort of their illness,
you know, all these different issues. It started off as something being like sort of like a comical thing, you know, like this person thinks they're a dog, et cetera, et cetera. It has zeroed down into like, basically like, oh, these gay people are near children, you know, like these sort of like deeper sort of more homophobic issues. Recently there was a shooting in Colorado Springs, which is actually like more conservative community in Colorado. Like Colorado is like interesting in that the cities are like quite liberal. You know, if you go to Denver, it's like extremely liberal. You go to Boulder, it's like the most liberal place in the world. But if you go to like place of Colorado Springs where the Air Force has their headquarters, it can be like in some of the sort of more evangelical, weirder churches in the US have their headquarters. You know, it can be like a little conservative, but it's still like an outpost of like many rural place states or, you know, provinces. It has like sort of an outpost of like liberal and gay culture.
Yeah.
There was a nightclub that got shut up. I think it was yesterday or the day before, and I don't want to take the podcast too much, but it was, you know, in the prior week.
This week.
And people are saying that it may be caused by the targeting of that nightclub by an account called Libs of TikTok, which has been featured on Tucker Carlson and, you know, a number of sort of other places. Joe Rogan, which, you know, I quite like Joe Rogan, but I find him to be a little gullible about some issues.
Yeah, he's not the smartest guy ever.
Yeah, he's like smart about some things and really dumb about other things. Like there's something to say about like being objective can be stupid. You know, it's
exactly yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah.
But this particular account had been banned for some time for targeting trans people, et cetera, et cetera. But there was a shooting in this nightclub. I believe 5 people have died and some other people are severely injured. Colorado Springs is not a big city, so it's a big hit to the gay culture there. But they had actually doubled down on sort of their targeting of that. And I found that to be quite interesting because I thought it was a new turn that I hadn't anticipated.
That's the thing was like, I feel like the whole thing with Libs of TikTok was people were like, oh, you're like putting people at risk by putting them on blast. But like, this is different because something actually happened. And then they were like, hey, like something happened and we're supporting it. You know what I mean? Versus just like, you know, people are putting information about themselves online. And like, when you post something about yourself, you're opening yourself up to being scrutinized by other people. And if someone like elevates you talking about your gender identity, like that sucks, but you did post it on the internet.
Yeah.
But someone being like, hey, this shooting happened. And also like, I'm going to blast it on my platform and I'm also encouraging, you know, more targeted harassment and stuff. Like that's a completely different ball game.
Yeah. I'm pretty surprised to see that. Cause I think that, that actually makes me think that they actually know they did something wrong. Like it's, you know, that, because I think if you had just sort of said like, if you really believed that you didn't do anything wrong, you would just probably be like, move on. Right.
It's like the Pepsi jet.
It's the Pepsi jet. I did. If you explain the Pepsi jet, because
I just watched the Netflix show about it. My
wife just watched as well.
Yeah, she did. It was so great.
It was in the late 90s. Is that my correct?
Yeah, it was 1994.
And there was a point, sort of like a point system. If you drank a lot of Pepsi or Pepsi products, you could get traded in for things. I remember trading in for, I had a Pepsi t-shirt that I had done.
Nice.
It was quite cool.
Yeah, it was like shirts, baseball caps, leather jackets, whatever. Yeah. And
if you got
commercial,
10 million points, I think you could get a Harrier jump jet.
7 million points.
Yeah.
They had put on the commercial, the big prize was a 7 million point Harrier jet. And it was supposed to be a joke. But when someone actually tried to get it, instead of like just ignoring them or being like, oh, it's a joke, they like changed all their marketing to be like, no, it really is a joke. So they admitted that they knew it wasn't obviously a joke, right?
So in typical like 90s fashion, like the young man who had collected all the points went to court, and he could have settled out of court for $1 million, but he didn't. Because he said, like, I'm going balls to the wall. Like, it was a very balls to the wall era for those listeners who were born after that, which I know we have some.
Me.
It's, whoa.
I was born in 1996,
Are you really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I know. Don't tell anyone.
I don't think anyone will know. But it's quite funny. Wow. You could be my kid. Funny.
Yeah, I could.
But
theoretically,
I'd be so proud. I just want you to know that I'd be so proud. But it was really interesting because like I remember at the time being like, yeah, I would do that. I would like to collect these Pepsi points. I just didn't like soda that much, right?
Yeah.
But he decided not to settle out of court. He didn't get his $1 million and didn't get his jump.
He didn't get anything.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like Libs of TikTok. They basically admitted that they did something wrong because they doubled down on it instead of just like ignoring it, or you know what I mean? Like there's so many things they could have done, but instead they were like just, I guess, trying to make it worse or like claiming it. Like it's like, not to bring up ISIS again.
I just think we did that. No, it's funny to me because actually it's funny because it reminds me of Al Qaeda claiming every terrorist attack everywhere.
Literally,
yeah. And they're like, no, we did that. We had an impact. We're important.
They're like, please, we did that one.
Yeah, please subscribe to our Substack. But that's really interesting. Last thing I want to ask you about before we go is the Donald Trump reinstatement on Twitter. I'll give you my quick take is that I don't think Donald Trump actually wants to be president, or he doesn't want to do the things he has to do to be president.
No.
I don't think he'll come back to Twitter for some time. And I may be proven wrong as soon as we press send on this podcast. But I don't think he's got the dog in him anymore, right?
I don't think so either.
Yeah. I saw his recent podcast, announcement, and he just looked tired and weak. And, you know, he actually looked like someone who spent too much time in Washington. He's like,
for the first time ever.
These things and like, blah, blah. He sounded like a Democratic senator. It was awful. And I was like, this guy is toast. But what I thought was funny was that Elon Musk had basically thought to himself, like, oh, if we get Trump back, we'll get a lot, you know, that'll get us a bump in the,
you we'll know, get the parlor yeah. crew.
Yeah. And like, I'll be honest with you, like when they had Elon Musk had posted whether they should bring Trump back or not. And a lot of my liberal friends may say, like, you're an awful person for voting like this. But I said, yes, of course. Absolutely.
I don't think he should have been banned in the first place.
No, let him out. But if you look back at his posts, it's so embarrassing. And it makes you really view, like the low, like, things have evolved in the last 3 or 4 years. Like, he's not edgy actually anymore. Like, not in the way that we are today.
The bar has changed, right?
The bar has been raised. You have, like, college professors posted shit posts now. It's different.
It's true.
So, what I wanted to ask you is, if all the reinstatements, and we're going to include Trump, do you think they matter? Or do you think that we're just, like, so jaded that, like, whether a person is on Twitter or not doesn't matter anymore?
I don't think it matters. I feel like so many people have, like, deleted their social media, like, or, like, don't even control their own social media anymore, especially when it comes to, like, celebrities or, like, public figures, that it's, like, irrelevant.
Yeah. Yeah. And
I don't know. Yeah, it's just, like, it's kind of crazy that he's even wants to be back on, but he's obviously, like, that's his mentality.
I don't know if he does or not. Interesting part is that he hasn't posted, and I don't know if he does. But, you know, I think that, you know, as social media goes, so we go. And that may mean that we'll all go away. And I think someday we will. Dust into dust, ashes and ashes. It's been a great show. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can you please, and every time we have you on the show, I have to fight tooth and nail to get you to plug your stuff. Can you talk a little bit about your Twitter, and you can talk a little bit about your upcoming show?
Yeah, I have something to plug for once. You can find me on Twitter at hogpussy.
Can you repeat that? What was your Twitter?
Hogpussy.
Okay. And that's hogpussy. Thank you.
S-S-Y, that's right. Yeah. And I have a comedy album coming out on November 25th.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I am very excited to do that. And where can we find that comedy album when it comes out?
You can find it on Spotify. It was produced by Howl and Roar Records, which is a Canadian female-owned comedy recording company. And it's a compilation album, so there's going to be like 5 other local Ottawa female comedians on there as well.
For the ladies, for the men.
For the ladies.
For the babies. For the thems. We love you, Sophie Hayes, and I'm so glad to have you here. I hope that people will check you out at hogpussy.
That's
love
right.
You. Keep in touch. Talk to you soon.
Love ya. XOXO.